right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here, sitting with my co-host, Scott McCloud. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
You know, life's okay. You can't really complain. I mean, you can. We're going to. We're going to complain today at some point. Nothing nobody's said yet, but, you know, that's a situation. Outside of that situation, things are good. You know, things are good. You know, weather's turning, cottage is open, you know. At least we got that. Let's say that. We got our health.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? We can't really complain about that, but certainly some big news this past week as far as the golf course closures. So that certainly put a little bit of a pall on everybody here in Ontario, the only place in North America that we don't have active golf right now, unfortunately. But hey, you know what? We're going to get on to better things this week, and we've got lots of other things we can talk about as well. And this episode is sponsored by Ping Golf and the all-new G425 lineup. Learn more at ca.ping.com. Certainly happy to have Ping on board for a few episodes, and we appreciate them supporting the T-Talk podcast.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised they haven't called earlier, obviously. I mean, being that I am a celebrity to them, you know, 2014 Fitter of the Year for Ping in Canada, and never named one after. So, you know, I guess I'm the reigning champ. I'm the reigning champ. Let's go.
Are you sort of like Shane Lowry being the open champ?
Yeah, exactly. Shane Lowry. Yeah. I haven't heard of one being named after, so I'm just going to assume I still am. And maybe
you're just going to go with it.
Yeah, someone at Dave might message me at some point, might get a cease and desist on that, but who knows? well, okay, let's hit the week that was. This is where we give our birdie par bogey an honorable mention. You know what? Let's get it out and done with. I'm starting first this week. I'm going with my honorable mention, and it's a withdraw, and it's Rob Ford and the Ontario governments for stopping golf in Ontario. This is the only province or state in North America where apparently you cannot golf. No one, you know, it's bad when Scott, so we've gone through this pandemic. Everyone's had opinions on both sides of things, yeah. Right? Even from the beginning when everything was shut down, right? Golf wasn't allowed. And at that point we were all like, yeah, I don't know if it's safe to go golf. I don't. Can I touch that flag stick? I don't know. Can I, you know, throw somebody? Remember when you get a ball on the side of the hole, like your buddy's ball there, and you wouldn't even know if you wanted to pick it up and throw it? Stuff like that. We didn't even know, right? And we all listen. But now, you know, we know. And you know it's bad when both sides of it are like, this makes no sense. When the non-golfer is like, this makes no sense. And that is exactly what this is. This, in my opinion, makes no sense at all. Golf is played on kilometers of property. I don't know how you cannot socially distance out there. You know, tennis, same thing. You know, all these camping. Isn't camping the point to be away from? You can tell I'm annoyed, and this is where I'm saying, you know what? Just withdraw. You don't know what you're doing anymore. This is not your decisions to make. Ask for help, because you're just making it up at the seat of your pants. That's my honorable mention. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, that was going to be my bogey this week, and double bogey, triple bogey, everything. I think the big thing here is that, you know, the collective group within golf, the We Are Golf Association, as far as Canada and, you know, Ontario is obviously the biggest portion here that is dealing with things. They put protocols and they put a lot of safety things in place, and they've proven it. They've proven that golf can function. And we're not talking about just on the golf course. And I think that's one issue some of the people trying to argue, and they're talking about the acreage, about the golf course. Yeah, that's easy. We're going to social distance out there. You know, there's massive amounts of space there, but we're talking about protocols for parking lots and around clubhouses and pro shops and, you know, online payments and all. I mean, there's been a lot of work that's been done here that's demonstrated that these businesses can function properly and not be a risk. And really at this time when we don't have a lot that we can focus on, it is something that's really important for a lot of people's lives. And, you know, it's not about, oh, it's golf, it's the elite. It's not just elite. There's all sorts of people that play the game. And, you know, I go back and even thinking about when some municipal golf courses closed and listening to the stories of the people that would go, and it was their only thing they did. It was their social exercise. It was their mental health. It was everything for them, because it was the only thing they could do and afford, because they could do it fairly cheaply. And it was just a case of having those hours to walk outside and be peaceful. So I think the big thing here is it's not about, you know, a bunch of rich people playing golf. That's not what it's about. It's about an activity that can be done safely, that the industry, which employs thousands and thousands of people and does, you know, contributes billions into this province, has done a lot of work to make it safe. And I think as a result of that, they're definitely going to have to sort of reconsider this. You know, obviously they turned around on a few things already, and I certainly can see this happening as well. And I get it. People all of a sudden saying, oh, well, you know, it's only a few weeks and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, you know what? Those are important weeks for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. So
start of the year. The start of the year is almost arguably the most important part for the golf industry. So, you know, you could kill a lot of businesses this way. That's not the, I mean, to be honest with you, golf isn't important. Let's be honest here. In the grand scheme of everything that is happening right now, it's not important. I agree. Health is important. But when it doesn't make sense and it's the complete opposite of everything that's been proven, at this point, you may as well call and say, you literally cannot leave your home at all. Because, like, it just doesn't even, like, you know, there's so many other things. You could even go to this extent of like, hey, okay, you know, you can golf, but unfortunately, unless you bring your own, you take a cart by yourself, you can't take a cart. You can maybe threesomes. You can only go to the threesomes. Hey, heck, twosomes, whatever. There's so many other options they could have done, but instead there's a political agenda here at play. It's unfortunate that people's lives are in the middle of people trying to, you know, show an image of, you know, I can't say I'm wrong. And this is on so many levels. You know, you can go, we're not a political podcast, but you can go on the federal level, you can go on the provincial level, across the board. Politics has never been one to say, hey, I'm wrong, right? Because it's your deathbed. You're not getting reelected.
Sure. The sign of weakness, right? Yeah.
You know, no, it's not the sign of weakness. It's the sign of strength to be able to say, hey, you know what? I'm wrong. You're right. Let's move on. I'm annoyed, as you can see. I you know, let's leave it to the professionals, the doctors that have said this makes no sense. Not the, you know, the Dougs of the world. They even wrote Rob Ford in there. I think I'd rather Rob running the province at this point. Oh, all right, Scotty, you know what? Let's turn around. You gave your, I gave my honorable mention. You gave your bogey. You know, let's give me something positive here, because I'm fired up and it's early.
All right, let's get to my birdie of the week. You know, Stuart Sink, his play at Harbour Town, he won the RBC Heritage for the third time. I think it was really cool to see a guy who's, you know, 47, wins that set for that second time in 2021. You know, it was fun to watch. The cool thing that I took away from it, though, is watching him embrace a lot of new things. I mean, one, he's got his son as a caddy. Two, you know, he's using a different method. He's using that decade method to figure out where his targets are and so forth. And people not familiar, Decade Golf by Scott Fawcett, which is used by a lot of other players as well. He's also gone back, worked with his coach, and used, you know, modern technology to figure out some things to gain some yardage and gain some speed. And you see him playing with a player like Colin Morikawa, who won the PGA Championship. And, you know, here's Stuart Sink, 47 years old. I know he's a big guy and everything, but, you know, he bombs at 40 yards.
He's a large lad.
Yeah, but he bombs at 40 yards past Morikawa. So I think it was just really neat to show, you know, again, that golf is not about just
get it done.
Totally, 100%. It's not one way. It's not the Bryson method or whatever. There's lots of ways. And that's the great part about golf, is the fact that you can do it lots of ways. It's not going to be the, you know, it's not the basketball player that's 7'2" and can jump super high that dominates everything. There's a lot of ways to play this game, and that's why it appeals to all of us as well.
I agree. It wasn't a tournament on Sunday that you knew was going to have any flair. It was over. No, everyone knew that. But I watched every minute of the Sunday because I just wanted to see the interactions. I thought it was such a cool moment watching his son and him walk down the fairways, talk through that. They're getting a lot of chirps of like, oh, they take forever. Once they've made the decision, he has the information, they hit the ball and away they go. And there's theories, you know, the guys he played with on Sunday, Morikawa played bad once he played with them on Saturday. And I'm hearing all that, you know, that's
done in 3 hours. They were done in 3 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah, so, that's on you as a player too. Like, you know, it's the weekend. I hate to break it to you, there's a product there. It's going to be slower on the weekend because the cameras need to get in place and all these different things. So get over it. I loved it. I thought the interview after was hokey and cheesy and everything in between with, you know, these massive human beings that are just looking like kids out there, but just a cool moment all around. I probably pretty dumb. I tweeted out, you know, it's going to be awesome for Reagan being at the Ryder Cup with his dad, I looked up after the tournament. This guy is nowhere close to making the Ryder Cup team. And I was just like, I was in complete shock. I even then looked up, has he even played in a Ryder Cup before? And he's played in a ton of them. They've only ever won once. And the last one was in 2010. But, you know, if he plays this hot, you have to pick him. He's a guy that's been there before. He's playing hot. Two wins on the year. Matches a couple other guys. I don't have it off the top of my head right now. You got to pick him. I think you have to pick him if you're Steve Stricker, who also won this weekend.
Yeah, so exactly. By coincidence.
Maybe Stu's like, hey, you know, the old guys, you gotta have an old guy there. And, you know, I think Stu's just at that perfect point in his career. Yeah, it was an awesome weekend. I enjoyed that. And I love that golf course. I gotta get there. That golf course looks so much fun.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's funny. I didn't like it the first time I played it. And I got chirped by a whole lot of people going, what are you thinking? And the thing is I got to go back. And the more you played it, I think the reason why I didn't like it the first time was the fact that you could hit a fairway and not have a shot into a green. And then, you know, you begin to realize that nobody says you're just because you hit a fairway, you know, whoever designates it that way, that you're going to have the opportunity. You got to hit the right part of the fairway and the right angle and to play. And yeah, it makes it really cool. It makes it different. And you're right. I mean, that's part of the compelling nature of this tournament as well. It wasn't because of the fact that, you know, Stuart Singh was running away with it. It's the fact that it's a cool golf course, and you know, there's a lot of things that can happen there to a lot of different players.
Yeah, my birdie of the week is going to another person that's kind of turned back the clock to when they were 20, 3 years ago. Lydia Ko, back in the winner's circle. This is a player that dominated for so long. In 2016, Lydia Ko won four times with a major, was on top of the world, didn't win for 2 years, won in 2018, and then finally comes back and wins 3 years later, a name that wasn't even really in the mix that much, just kind of making a lot of changes, a famous equipment change with PXG. And, you know, I'm not getting into that. You can take your theories elsewhere. I don't know enough about PXG to dispute them either way, so I don't really care. But it's just awesome to see that. She's good for the game. She's 23 years old. Let's remember that. 23. And she won in 2012. She won the Canadian Open. Like, it's crazy. It's nice to see it. It's great for the game, Lydia Ko. But a quick bogey to the Golf Channel. Win the Lotte, whatever you want to say, championship was on. Instead of showing it, they had college men's golf on. And, you know, they say grow the game. They have all the commercials out there. And then you throw on guys from who knows where university playing, other guys from
the Western Intercollegiate.
Yeah, no one gives a crap, you know, college it. Probably not even a word at this point. I'm just annoyed. Clear, I'm in a mood, but like, that's not growing the game. You're not going to see those guys outside that TV. Throw on the ladies' game. Throw on Lydia Ko in her prime, shooting minus 28. I guess we don't need to change the LPGA. Remember that article that came out a few weeks ago?
Yeah,
let's get lower scores out on the LPGA and really let them shine. I believe the last two tournaments, what was it, minus 25 and now minus 28. It seems like it's always that on the LPGA. Lydia Ko, birdie.
Yeah, amazing. Great to see her success. Obviously, she won early, like you said, the Canadian Opens early on. She held the record for quite some time as the earliest winning professional at 14 years old and winning the New Zealand Open, which was, you know, ended up being broken by Brooke Henderson. But yeah, it's hard to believe she's around for this long, and her swing looks so good. A big credit to Canadian Sean Foley for doing a lot of work with her. And a lot of the work is just not technical stuff as well. You know, he is a mentor to her as well. And you know, as people will hear with our guest today, there's certain things about Lydia Ko that make her a special player. And I think with her working with Sean Foley, I think there's some chemistry there that really is magical. And the fact that she's done this now, I think it leads to a lot more for the rest of the year for her. She's really, you know, she's broken that sort of the deadlock, and she's ready to go.
Yeah, a couple weeks in a row, so. Watch out. I might throw you, maybe just sprinkle a little bit on her in the next couple weeks.
LA?
And that was your honorable mention as well this week.
Yeah, it was.
Let's hit our pars for the week, and then, you know, actually, I'm going to hit a bogey, and I'm going to wrap up. We're going to wrap up with pars. We're all over the place, so I'm going to hit a bogey. I'm giving a bogey to Corey Connors' putter. I like this guy. we love Corey. Corey's our guy. We know that, right? Everyone knows that, but they're really, you know, there's not many stats where I'm not seeing triple digits beside his name right now in putting. It feels like, and it could be feel the lag putting is a lot of it. It feels like he's got all these crazy comebackers. Maybe it's just in those key moments and it's just what I see, and, you know, it's feel and stats might actually play a part. But, you know, we're talking strokes gained, not really close there. It's just, you know, it's not great. It needs some work, obviously. I think it's the only thing holding him back from just firing off a ton of wins here. It feels like he's just not making anything right now.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me, I mean, to go in T8 in the Masters and then T4 here at Harbortown, it really reminds me a lot of, you know, how Brooks' play is, you know, the fact that it's a lot of greens, really good ball striking, but, you know, just that lack of that, you know, we'll call it world-class putting is the difference between top fives and top tens to destroying the tour. I mean, realistically, I mean, if he just became just a little bit better, and I know he's working on it, obviously, he's diligent about that. But it would just be nice to see. And I think on that same vein, my par this week is pretty much the same type of thing. It's, you know, Colin Morikawa, same situation, get a great ball striker. And then we don't know what's going to happen on the putting green. I mean, trying to watch him hit 3 and 4 footers was just a nightmare. I just had no idea what was going to happen. And, you know, obviously the broadcast is probably emphasizing it a little bit, especially when they show some of the lip outs and the violent lip outs. But, you know, these two players are so good, you know, tee to green, and just a little bit better with the putting. And man, they're going to be right at the top of the charts.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's why it's golf, right? It's,
yeah, true.
You can't have it all at once. Yeah. And that's the part that keeps us coming back. But since we're talking putting, I'm going to get a par, and I'm going to bring this up with our guest this week as well, just to see his thoughts. And I'm giving a par to Billy Horschel's comments about arm lock putters and whether we should allow it. And comes after 2 rounds with Will Zalatoris, kind of awkward. Didn't say it obviously during those 2 rounds, which is such a Billy way. He's getting kind of cringy. He's getting kind of cringy. There's a couple videos that have come out where, like, he can't make eye contact with the crowd, but he'll, like, say something, and then he'll, like, smirk after. It's just, he's getting a little cringy for me, and I think
it's sort of like his Masters apology. He apologized, you know, he didn't apologize. He just said, "I'm going to get better," but he never really said sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he's a Florida guy. I don't know. That's kind of Gators, I guess, in a way. I don't know. I'm just making that up. But, yeah, it's, I don't know how I feel. I kind of agree with him on the arm lock, but I'm not sure, and that's why I'm on the par side. I've tried it. You've obviously tried it. What haven't you tried? And for me, I hated it. I hated the feel. Did not feel good, and I would never do it. And then Matt Kuchar was trying the opposite arm. He was trying the back arm. And I was just like, can you imagine being in the tour truck with Matt Kuchar and be like, okay, so I had to add so much loft on your putter on Monday, and now you're here on Wednesday, and you're asking me to completely de-loft this thing now because it's way on your other. It's just crazy.
It seems desperate. It really does.
I don't know. I'm unsure. Will Zalatoris said, you know, when he switched to it in 2018, he shot 59 like 2 weeks later. He knew never to go back. So I don't know. I'm unsure. Why don't we ask the expert, Scotty? He might have an opinion.
Yeah, Gareth Wroflewski is going to join us this week on the show. And, you know, world-class putting coach, worked with dozens and dozens of players on the LPGA Tour, touring pros on the PGA Tour, McKenzie Tour, all over the place. 3 number ones on the LPGA Tour. And I'm certainly, if there's somebody who can dig into that for us, it's going to be Gareth Wroflewski.
All right, Scotty, but before we get to the interview, we have a message from our sponsor, Ping.
At Ping, our culture of curiosity has been driving innovations for over 60 years. Innovations like the new G425 Iron, which brings you greater distance without sacrificing the forgiveness and control you need to play with precision. And with free access to the Arcos Caddy system, you'll play smarter and shoot lower scores. The new Ping G425 Iron. Better by every measure. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right. We want to welcome to the podcast Gareth Rafleski, well known to a number of people, but best known for his work with the LPGA Tour Players, but a PGA of Canada professional based in London, Ontario, and the 2018 PGA of Canada Teacher of the Year. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's great to finally get you on here. I know we've talked about it over a couple years, I guess, now, but, you know, always hard to catch up with you because you're always working it out on tour a lot, occasionally home, but home a little bit more these days. Why don't you start a little bit before we get into that, just to give people a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are now.
Well, I'm an engineer by trade, so I studied engineering at school. And then just had the bug for golf. And even after I graduated and worked, I just still couldn't give up on the golf thing. So obviously tried to play for a few years, learned a lot, which has probably been pretty good for my teaching. And then started teaching. One of the first guys I ever got was Mike Gligic, who's on the PGA Tour now. And I played with Mike. And afterwards, he just said, "Hey, can you look at my putting?" Because obviously he made nothing and I made everything, and I barely beat him. Like if he makes anything, he beats me by about seven, you know. But so I started working with better players right away, and then it just kind of snowballed. But the biggest change, I think, was when I decided that I wasn't going to spend any time working on full swing. I just decided that if I was going to make myself kind of separate myself a little bit, I needed to sort of specialize. So short game and putting is kind of what I have spent the greater part of 12, 13 years now doing. So you tend to be just a little further down the rabbit hole than most guys if you've only spent that amount of time working on it. So I think that's why more people have reached out to me. It's just it's experience. You know, you just have done more, I've seen more. I can fix things quicker than most people probably can. Doesn't mean they don't have the knowledge to do it. It's just I've seen the problems the same way. So it's been great. You know, it's been a lot of fun, and I still love doing what I'm doing. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, level of player I'm working with. It's just fun to see them improve.
Now, you talk about, you know, specializing in the short game stuff. What was the ultimate choice to do that? Was it the fact that, you know, you felt that was where you were elite at as a player? Was it just not being able to see it in the full swing as well? What was it ultimately that went, you know, this is the path I'm going down?
I think it's both of those. You know, I think I taught myself how to be a good putter. I wasn't a great putter, but I taught myself how to be a good putter. I generally was decent around the greens. I never was a great ball striker by any stretch, you know. So I think growing up in Ireland, just the conditions don't lend itself to target golf. So like you're going to be playing in tough conditions. So you're going to have to learn to get up and down and move the ball around. And I think the more experience I had in that there, it made sense for me to specialize in that area, you know. And it was just something that I was interested in. And I know when I started researching, there just wasn't much stuff on it. You know, it was, you know, like Pels had definitely a lot of stuff out there, and there's some people back before him, you know, and some pros had dabbled here, but there wasn't enough great info. So it made more sense for me to kind of just run down that way.
So how hard was that for you then to sort of, you know, make your own education? I mean, as you said, there wasn't a lot out there, but how did you go about doing that and training yourself to be better and more educated in that part of the game?
Biggest thing is when I was still trying to play, because I was kind of new and I was getting to the end of it. So I went and seen a bunch of teachers and I just kind of asked them, you know, work on helping me with my bunker game, help me with my chip. And I may not have needed a ton of it. I'm sure I did need some of it, but I kind of picked up a couple of things from them. And then, you know, Pels and some of the other people that I would have researched and read and, you know, got a chance to talk to. And then I just had a lot of questions myself, you know, like what, you know, just simple things like what is the ball supposed to launch at? You know, is it supposed to launch at 1 degree, 2 degrees, 3 degrees? You know what? So then I started buying technology and then trying to do it. And then I started talking about putting and chipping more often, even just with my members. And then they got interested. And then I started teaching hundreds and hundreds and thousands and thousands and thousands of lessons. And over time, I just decided. And even to this day, there's definitely, I'm very careful when I'm watching social media because I don't want to run down the same rabbit holes as everybody else. I want to look at different ideas and I just bought a new piece of technology like about 3 weeks ago, and a fellow pro says, oh, there's a guy, he's a doctorate. He knows this technology inside and out. He's your guy. And I says, well, I don't want to talk to him yet because he's just going to tell me what he knows, which is great. And I definitely want that information, but I want to have my own ideas. I want to pursue things that I'm interested in because, as you know, the way social media is, we all just kind of follow along as herds. So, and not that that's a bad thing. You know, obviously when the people have got the best information, you want to kind of jump on the bandwagon and move along with it. But I think when I was just interested in this subject, I wanted to do it for myself because I wanted to really know the information as opposed to thinking, oh, who did I steal that information off, you know?
Well, all of our listeners are, I would say, 99% amateur golfers. They come here, you know, for the tour stuff. They stick around for Scotty's lessons at the end. We'll get to the tour stuff in a moment. I want to start. We're going to flip it. What's the the biggest difference? Let me reset there. I choked on my whatever. What's in your opinion the biggest difference between the high end amateur golfer, let's say a single digit handicap, to the tour level, even to McKenzie tour level, the start of professional golf in the short game? Like, where is the biggest gap, and where can the amateur player try to tighten that gap?
I think when you look at both of them, they're both, the talent level is there. So even you take a McKenzie tour player and a PGA tour player, talent level is similar. You know, it's about the same. The problem is that as a professional, even a PGA Tour professional, they've really decided they wanted to own their craft. They've decided that they really wanted greater depth of information so that they could make better choices. And when you ask them questions, they've already established their best answer. They already know why they do what they do. Where like at the McKenzie Tour, you know, or even at down a level, they are good and they're talented good, but they're not professional good. They haven't actually, you know, it's kind of like just because I've done a degree in something doesn't make me an expert at it. You know, where you get a guy who's got a PhD, he's just, like we talked about before, he's just further down that road than every other guy. And it certainly has nothing to do with talent, because if you just take talent, they're probably very similar, but they have a greater understanding of the shot selection that they need around the green, and they're more likely to pick the right shot more often than the other guys would.
So even from an amateur level, it's just missing the why. Like, why am I choosing this shot versus this shot, and being able to practice both of them, and then not only be able to do both of them, but pick the right one in the right moment.
Yeah, and like I've gone out and tour with players, and I'm like, well, why, and they're watching what did you see today? I'm like, why did you hit that shot on 7? And they're like, well, what else was I supposed to do? And I'm like, well, there was about 4 other options. You know, I think you picked the hardest shot, and then you're upset, you know, because you didn't execute it. And I'm like, well, of course you didn't execute it, you know, but that to me is just a bit of a lack of knowledge, you know? So then we talk about, well, what could we have done? And then I show them a bunch of different shots, and they're like, oh yeah. Yeah, that is a lot easier, you know?
Yeah, then, we saw this firsthand at the Canadian Open. We're walking with the Canadian amateur team and Derek Ingram, mm-hmm. and one of the amateur players, you know, he's short on a par 3, rolls down this massive hill down, and he just automatically pulls out the 60, because that's just what, you know, young kids do. It's all, they just chip around, they just grab one club, right? And Derek watched him hit a couple from there. He's like, hold on, why are you doing that? And he gives him the, you know, a lower lofted club, you know, asks him to take less of a swing, to take less risk, puts it to a foot, and you could see the light bulbs click. And for me, it was just such a cool moment to see that right there on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. And that's the time that you need to be addressing that. You need to watch someone make the mistake and then be able to jump right in. Don't wait until after the round to you know, break it down. Do it right there and then. Like, you can have a great interaction with someone right there and then, get them to hit a couple of different options, and that's really going to stick. And I think a lot of times when people are learning the short game, they kind of go for a chipping lesson. I want to learn how to chip, where I don't really teach that. I teach you how to hit shots. Like, what type of shot are you looking for? Like, and even like bring it back to my members, you know, they're like, well, I struggle on number 7 or number 8 or whatever it is. How do I hit that shot? So I show them how to hit that shot. I give it a name. So we name the shot. So once they're able to do it, then their ability to recall the shot is much greater because they've actually identified the shot and they're able to actually pull it out right away and use it. You know, so it's very, very good. But if you just get someone over on the chipping green and you don't give them any of that other information, then their ability to recall the shot is just going to be not possible.
Now you're talking there about that interaction with the player and, you know, how important it is. And I guess that leads us to, you know, a discussion for the fact that, you know, these days for you, you're not able to get out on tour as much as you have been in the past and work with the players up close. And, you know, I've seen how you've worked. I've been at Canadian Women's Opens and other tournaments and watch you working with the players. And, you know, you're not able to maybe see as much as you possibly could when you're sitting on one side of the computer versus, you know, them on the other side versus being there in person. So why don't you explain to us a little bit about how that sort of changed things right now, especially during this time?
Well, as you'll know as well, like when you're looking at the video and you're trying to make your best assessment and they're a Monday, a Tuesday or a Wednesday at an event. And the first thing you're doing is you're trying not to mess them up for the week. You know, you're trying to make sure that whatever you decide to do is going to have a good impact on them. So there's a lot of times that you just can't get all of the information. So you have to just close your mouth, you know, you have to just not say anything. Or the things that you say, you're pretty sure that that's going to make an impact. Or you'll work on something like skill building or something like that, as opposed to like a technical change, because technical changes early on in the week don't necessarily show up that week. So you're better off doing some skill building stuff and some performance stuff. But it's changed a lot. Like I've got good at like point the camera here. Okay. Turn in this direction, turn in this direction. Okay. Do this drill, you know, so I've got a little bit better at that there. But the one thing that really stood out to me this year is when you're with someone, they're a lot more open, you know, they'll talk about what's kind of gone on. And I think it's in those moments that you can actually make some really good coaching and, you know, advancements. You know, it's not necessarily, okay, put your elbow here, you know, put your head here. Those things are obviously important, you know, just to make sure mechanically everything's working, but it's getting inside the engine and getting it all, making sure it's running well, you know, where, you know, over Zoom or, you know, with headphones on and a bunch of other players around you, you know, they don't open up nearly as much. So it's a bit tricky.
Well, it's just golf, right? You're not actually able to start with everything else that's going on in life that plays a big part when you are coaching. If you have something else going on at home, if you have kids in the background throwing stuff around like you do right now, right? That stuff plays a part in coaching, and not being able to do it. Somebody, maybe you can't pick up on those social cues from a distance of like, you know what? They're not in it right now, right? They're in this Zoom, but they're just not in this conversation.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that I think if I get on the Zoom with any of my LPGA players, they're more likely to ask for the kids than me, to be honest with you. They're like, where's the kids? Bring the kids in, you know? I'm like, hey, I'm chopped liver. Like, I kind of get that every time I go out on tour. They're like, where's the kids? Where's the kids? Oh, they're at home. No. Okay, well, you'll do, I suppose.
All right, teach me how to chip. That's really cool. Well, we get chirped a lot on this podcast. We bring guys on that work on the tour that we don't ask them who they work with. It's like a faux pas. But you had a pretty decent week, you could say, with Lydia Ko picking up a win and somebody that you are actively working with and open about. How was that for you, seeing something like that and, you know, how far she's come in the last couple of years? And it was just crazy to even think, considering how dominant she was for so long.
Yeah. Like I started with her in 2016. So we did a lot of work there and she'd been through a lot of different coaches, you know, so trying to figure out the full swing a little bit. She's putted really well sort of since 2018. I haven't really done anything with her in a long time because I haven't been out on tour for over a year and a bit. But she is just one of the best people in the world. Like she's just a true professional. If she has a good day, a bad day, you wouldn't even know. You know, she's got great work ethic. She really asks great questions. You know, like she's a great student. I remember a lesson that I had with her once. And Scott, you'll find this funny. Like, too, whenever you're getting out and you're teaching, especially teaching a really great player, someone who's already had so much success, you know, especially as a new coach on tour, you really often want to tell them all the stuff you know. There's that need to go, okay, you know what, you could, you know, if you did this and this and this and this. So you almost overteach. And I remember working with her, and we worked on something like super simple. It was like the very first thing I said out of my mouth, you know, why don't we spend some time working on this here? And, you know, we had done a few minutes of it, and I'm ready to move on to the next thing. And she's like, you know what, I really like this. You know, let's spend the whole hour here together just working on that one thing. I think that's really good. I thought, wow, she's teaching me something here, because she's taking one little idea and then she's just going to move it towards what she wants to do with it. And then we just kind of work on it for an hour. But I could have taught her 10 things that day, and she may not have picked up on any of them, you know, but she's so smart that way, that one item, she just took it and ran with it. You know, so it was a big learning curve for me. The better the player, they want things concise and very simple. And then they need to sort of digest it themselves and turn it into something they can use.
I always wonder with coaches when they first get out on big tours with these big name players, do you get nervous?
For sure. When you meet them the first time, you know, when you're trying to do a good job and you're like, oh, you know, this is, and I've given many's a first lesson and I'm like, well, that's the last time I'm going to see them. You know, they're never, ever going to come back again, you know, but I think they understand, you know, I think it's all about that connection more than the information at that stage. You know, if they feel like they can connect with you and that they like you, and, you know, there's a good chance that they're going to hang on, at least give you a second try, you know. And that's been lucky enough for me. And I was fortunate too, because I've had a lot of success on the LPGA tour. So I kind of had a little bit of a good reputation, you know. So if you kind of stick with me, you know, everybody that I've had has had success and has improved. So that's been kind of a really nice thing. And, you know, obviously I had Lydia, Ari Jutanagaran, who got the world number one as well, and Jin Young Ko, world number one. So, you know, I've kind of seen those nice little rises, you know, and it's been.
I think that's okay. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's been a huge education, you know, trying to figure out, like, what was it that, you know, helped them, propel them up to that stage. And, you know, the other thing is, when you have success, how do you end up managing that success and continuing to get better? Like, that's a massive one, you know. Like, we tend to get players better and then they tend to hit a wall. They're either trying to jump up that next level, or, you know, they're disappointed because they've come down a little bit, but realistically they've jumped up so much in that little space that they're kind of like settling, you know. It's just trying to get bobbing into the right spot, and then they can make that next jump. So just keeping everybody on the level so that they can make those jumps when they need to make the jumps. Because sometimes, you know, when you're ready to make the jump and when the jump's going to happen is very different.
How I always meant to ask you, how much easier did it make you how much easier was it for you to get into sort of the culture of the LPGA by at first working with players like, you know, Jane Park and Tiff Joe, who are, you know, two of the, you know, most beloved players that are out there, outgoing players that I'm sure were very vocal about, you know, saying, hey, you know, this guy's great, you know, you should go see him. How much help was that to have those players early on?
You know what? I think it was massive. Like, I think if I had got someone who was very quiet and very reserved, you know, and maybe I had to, you know, I could be out there, I could be done, you know, it could have been that much. I think Jane and Tiffany, you know, spearheaded my career, really, to be honest with you, because they were the ones that were telling people, you know, both of them did well, both of them doubled their money their next years working with me. And everybody loves the girls, like, everybody absolutely loves them. So, and they're just a ton of fun to be around, you know. So when you have, you know, those endorsements, like, I think that's the biggest thing. I could never walk up to any player and tell them what success I had or what I know. It would never make any difference. Like, they're going to run away. But having a player like that sort of endorse you, that's how I built up, you know, as many players. I think I ended up counting there recently as about 60 odd LPGA players that I've worked with.
Wow.
And are you, there's a lot of different ways when you get to that level of, you know, how people, you know, are compensated from a percentage. Are you one where they call you and it's like they're paying for a lesson, or is each contract kind of different?
Everybody's a little bit different. You know, if I'm traveling a lot and they've asked me to be at certain tournaments, then, you know, we'd have to schedule that out. Or if it's just a, you know, like Nelly Korda would be one of the ones where, you know, from time to time I'd be out on tour and she'd just say, hey, can I see you? You know? So I get a lot of that, but I have a core group that I've kind of been together with. And they're the ones I look after. And then after that there, you know, if a player wants a bit of time here or there, then, you know, they usually come and find me, and I'm out there anyway, you know, so I might as well learn something and see if I can help some people too.
We're a very pro caddy podcast. I want to make sure we're not pro caddies. We're just pro we love caddies. Let's say that. You did some time caddying across your career. How has caddying made you a better teacher?
I think it's just nice to be on the other side, you know, because you know, as a player, we get into our own head so much, you know, and as a caddy, you can kind of, you can see, oh, I used to do that too. You know, they're like, what are you going to go for? 250 over the trees, over the water. Yeah. Okay. Good for you. You know, that's not going to happen, but you know, you just see these silly mistakes that the player would make, you know, and I think when you're out there on the other side, you're like, wow, I really didn't think through this, or I didn't have someone strong enough on the bag with me to be able to pull it off. And I think that's one of the things that I do now with some of the caddies that I help out with the players. It's understanding the player. And when the player gets stressed out, that's the caddy's time to shine. That's when they get to work. That's when they really get a chance to say, okay, you know what? I got you. Don't worry. I got you here. This is the choice. This is what you're going to do. And they're very, very specific about what they need to do. And that's really where I love some of the caddies that really take charge, because the player's probably not going to make a good choice in that moment. You know, so recognizing that and then, you know, taking control, I think is awesome.
So you actually work with the caddies of the players that you're working with for little things to almost help reset when things are going potentially wrong.
Yeah, you know, when players say something to me, then I'll basically pick up on it. They'll say, oh, you know, I wish he would do this more. I wish he would do. And, you know, you have to remember that some of these girls are 21, 22 years old, and they're running their own businesses and running their own careers. They maybe haven't quite learned how to articulate things to the people that they work with. So, you know, I can be that go-between, and it's very easy for them to say something to me and I can kind of go, hey, this is what I think would work well. And they're like, okay, yeah, I think I can do that there. You know, there's lots of them, you know, Pia and Lynn from Vision 54 are huge at that as well. They're so good for the players and the caddies, because they bridge that information instead of some player getting bitter, you know, or, you know, the caddy pulls the wrong club or whatever. And then, you know, that happens from time to time, but the player loses it on them, but the player is losing it on them because of, you know, the 10 things that have happened beforehand that they didn't talk about. You know, you know, if they opened up about some of that stuff, then, you know, there wouldn't be that, you know, blow up at the end. So, but yeah, no, I think the caddies are such a vital part. I'm a huge caddy fan as well. And some of the good ones, just, they know what to say at the right time. They've got good wit about them. You know, they can make the players laugh and joke around, and those are the ones you want to hold on to.
Some of the bad ones let their golf bag fall over when Kevin Chappell's in the middle of a 59, but it happens.
You know, quickly, obviously, you've obviously gained some, I won't call it notoriety, but gained some recognition for what you've been doing. And, you know, that has led you to some other things as far as your business is concerned as well. And, you know, one thing is starting to work into the training aids business. And, you know, I know that's been fairly successful for you, had some great tools that you've already come out with. How did that come about, and where do you see that going for you?
Yeah, so I was at the PGA show a few years ago, and Catalyst Golf, who are partners with Golf Supply House here in Canada, they approached me and just said, hey, do you have any ideas? And I says, oh, I have so many ideas. And as golf pros, you know, we're just too busy to just take it from, you know, inception all the way through to getting the product to Golf Town or something like that there. So they said, we'll do all the work. You just come up with the ideas and we'll keep throwing all of them back at you until you kind of get ones that you like. And I thought, no, that's a great, great partnership. So I have 6 products at the minute, and 4 of them are out, and there's 2 more coming. So they've been going crazy. And it, you know, it comes back to like the things that I'm out on tour with, and I'm like, God, if I could just get something to measure that would be kind of cool. And then I go to them and I say, hey, can you, I keep going to Home Depot to buy a ruler. Can you just make me a ruler, you know, that I can have myself that doesn't warp and doesn't bend and that can do a few other things? And they're like, yeah, no problem. So, you know, but people don't realize is that, you know, 7, 8, 9 different materials down the road, we're trying to find them, bringing it out on tour. And the player's like, oh, one player will say, that's too noisy. So the ruler is too noisy. I'm like, okay, we'll bring it back for changing again. The other one's like, that one's too shiny. It's too bright. You know, it shines too much. Okay, we'll change it again. You know, that one looks weird. Like, I don't want that one. So it's like the different things, and like, well, that one broke too easy. So now we need a different material. So, you know, when you think of, oh, it's just a ruler, and it is just a ruler, but like, we had to get a ruler that didn't bend, that didn't warp, that you could throw it nearby, you could throw it around, you could hit it and it wouldn't snap. So there's a few extra things. And then the putting mats have been really, really successful. So the putting mats sold out, I think, in almost 48 hours. So it came out and it was gone. And now we're waiting for another shipment to come in. Should be coming in the end of the month here. And the first time I brought the ideas to them for the putting mat, they looked, because I was kind of, I kind of looked around at other products and thought, okay, well, they did this and they did that. And then I kind of stole ideas from different places and I brought it to them and they said, it looks like it's been done before. Like it's a bit like, why don't you just come up with some ideas? So then I just came back and thought, well, what do I usually teach when I putt, you know? So then I just built a putting mat that basically incorporates my teaching philosophy. And then I went on TXG and talked about it. And then they're like, oh, wow, that's so it's very detailed because it's 10 years of my thinking about how to teach putting. But it's just a mat. Again, it's just a putting mat, but it's been great. And Catalyst Golf and Golf Supply House are fantastic partners. So for me, it's a no brainer. You know, I just wouldn't have the time to put the products out. So it's been great.
I was laughing pretty good when you were describing, you know, the rulers and the different colors. And for anybody that hasn't been inside the ropes, there's a lot of great people out there, but that just describes a lot of the people out on professional tours. Like, nothing is right the first 5-10 times. They're always tinkering. It always has to be perfect. They just had a good laugh there. And just quickly on the putting mat, it's going to get back in stock here. So let's do some, let's get some sales. What is that technique that you try to teach that you have displayed on this putting mat? You've basically written a book, dumbed it down 10 years onto a mat, and now you're selling it. So why don't you give us a quick TLDR of what that all means?
So basically, if you think about putting, you'll break it down into, say, 3 basic skills, because we can't teach green reading. There'd be 4 basic skills if it was green reading. So aim, start line, and speed control. So I actually, one of my newest purchases is a pair of eye tracking glasses that when I put it on players, I can actually see what they're looking at. So I can look at my iPad and I can actually interpret if they're looking at the hole or not looking at the hole. Wow. So one of the things that I had done with this research, you know, 7-8 years ago, was, you know, when people use chalk lines all the time, mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed when people were using chalk lines is that your eyes don't have to do any work. There's nothing that has to happen at that point because you see a straight line. So what I did is I broke it up and just made a series of dots about 2 to 3 feet apart. When you line up and you look down the dot line, if your eyes aren't calibrated, the line will actually look off. So one dot will be here, one dot will be there. And that's telling you that when you step over the ball and you look up and you're like, it doesn't look right. That's when we get that indecision and then you start changing and moving and then you come back or you put the line on the ball and then you look down and you're like, that line doesn't look right. So those are all common things you would find. So I basically designed a calibration test for your eyes So this allows you to get comfortable. And that's one of the things that we do on tour all the time. I just want the player to stand up, go, it's right edge. Yep, looks good. And like, that's it. They're not going to say, oh, it looks amazing. But they're not going to say, oh, it looks off. That's the biggest thing. So we did the eye line calibration. We did a start line, which is matched up with the ruler. So if you can start it within the line on the mat, you're starting it within 0.5 degrees. So if you think about 1 degree offline, left or right, it'll still hit the edge of the hole. So at half a degree, you're going to be pretty darn good. And then I did a bunch of blocks at the end of it to basically do a little speed work.
That's awesome.
So you kind of break them up. Now, there's about 5 or 6 other drills built in there, acceleration drills and different things and tempo drills. But those three main ones, you know, your aim, your start line, and your speed control, if you can get those down at home. And like, I've had PGA Tour pros call me up and say, hey, can I get one of your mats? And I don't even teach them, you know, so that's really cool for me. They're like,
I'm not getting one then. If
I think they see the eyeline calibration stuff and they're like, that's really cool. And I tell people, do it at home. Don't be wasting your time on the golf course. Just every day, throw your mat anywhere you can in the house. Just walk by it, calibrate your eyes, and just keep doing it every day, because that's honestly the true secret of getting better. It's not a lesson and then taking that information. You know, it's every day doing the same thing over and over and over. It's very boring, but that's where you're going to see the biggest benefits.
It's the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours that he talks about all the time. We're talking a lot about putting. We talked about this off the top, and it'll be my last question before we get out of here. I know you got to probably get the kids down to bed here in a moment, but Billy Horschel had some comments this weekend about the arm lock putting. I'm unsure of where I sit on it. He said, you know, he believes it should be banned. What are your thoughts on the arm lock putting?
You can definitely see that the anchoring is going to help, you know, but here's the thing. I would say if you tested most PGA Tour pros, they're going to be plus or minus 1 degree, whether they use that or they don't use it. You're not going to see a significant gain on the arm lock versus not having it, because they're at that level. Now, if you take someone who maybe has stroke issues, like the average person, I think you could probably see some really good benefits, because that's going to keep that face predictably more square through impact. But I think the amount of players that I've measured from good strokes to bad strokes, it's, you know, I think when everybody sits and works on their 4-footers or their 5-footers, it's a complete waste of time, because it's one of the easiest skills. It's one skill that is pretty much, if you hit a perfect putt, let's just say it's 0.2 or 0.3 plus or minus. If you hit a bad putt as a PGA Tour pro, it's probably like 0.7 or 0.8, maybe even 1 degree, you know. It's not getting up over 1.5. You know, it's never getting that high. So the margin or the error that you could improve is very, very minimal at that stage. So I don't see it being a big issue. I think people are reading into it more than they are, in my opinion.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention the new academy over in Ireland that you're involved in as well. I mean, obviously, we know you're based at Riverbend in London, but, you know, being from Northern Ireland, it's nice to have something that's back on the island for you. What's that project been like for you? And why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, when I wanted to open up something else, I had to have it in Ireland. That was really like my first academy. It had to be from where I was from. And the opportunity kind of came up. I met Gordon, who's our head teaching pro over there at the Sleeve Russell Hotel, which is fantastic. It's actually the home of the PGA of Ireland. And they have, you know, 18 holes. They've got an academy course. They've got a great driving range, great short game area. But it wasn't really being utilized well. So I just seen a potential there. Gordon's also a great coach, so I knew I had the right guy. And then we just started working at it. And it's, we built a beautiful studio over there. It's absolutely fantastic. We, you know, the well putt mats, we actually designed the whole studio with a well putt mat. And I designed all of the graphics and all of the drills. So it's basically a paint by numbers when you get in there. You know, you just go in, you run people through the drills. You know, we've got CapToe, we've got Sam Putt Lab, we've got the quad, you know, we've got so many other things, bending machines. And then we're just going to keep adding and adding to the stuff there. But no, it's they're still in lockdown. So we've got another week there and then we're going to be open. But we opened for Christmas sales and they did fantastic. So I think Gordon will be a very busy boy. And then once things get back to normal, I'll be able to get over there and spend some time with him. And sort of that's my plan, sneak over there a few times a year and do a bit of work and try and help some Irish people out.
Nice. Very nice. One last thing, maybe we always do a tip of the week. I end up doing that, but why don't we get you to do that? Why don't you tell us maybe one simple thing, and I think you maybe alluded to a couple things that people can work on, one simple thing that maybe our listeners could work on this year by themselves.
So the first thing, I think the biggest thing that people need to do is put tees out, two tees about 20 feet apart. Grab five balls and put five up to one tee and put them back and keep doing it until you have it absolutely mastered, until you can get the balls finishing beside each other. Speed control is the biggest variant or biggest error that you're going to find in putting. So if you can manage your speed control, you're going to stop three putting, you're going to put less stress on your game and you're going to make way more putts. All of a sudden those 20 footers and 25 footers, the odd ones start to fall in because you've got good speed control. And that's the biggest thing that we have to do every time on tour, is just getting the players so comfortable on the new greens. I'll tell you a funny story. So I went out one time with a player. They says, okay, meet me on the first tee. So I ran out first tee out in the golf course. They're putting, they're missing a couple, their speed control's off because brand new week, you know, they're just off the airplane. Like they're, you know, they haven't got it down. So it looks like they're really struggling. They're like, I don't know about these greens this week. They don't look good at all. Like they're bumpy and like, you know, and you're kind of shaking your head, just going, oh, yeah, okay, well, we'll spend some time and we'll work on it. So then I started seeing this more and more often. I'm like, okay, you know what? Every time they want to go play, I'm going to go and get them to spend 15 or 20 minutes on the practice screen with me before we go out. And I get them to do that two tees, 20 feet apart, and we'll just go bang, 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 back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Then they get out on the greens and they're like, boy, these are nice. They roll smooth, eh? Like, aren't they? These are pretty, pretty nice. And they're like, they feel exactly the same speed as last week. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, exactly the same. Yeah, you know? So there's that perception. And then that allows us to go on from the week and start off really well. But if I let them go out there to their own devices, then they get themselves into trouble, you know? So that 20 foot speed drill might seem very simple, but it's pretty, pretty impactful.
I'm going to do that the minute we're allowed to in Ontario, which we're not going to get into that today. Gareth, we really appreciate you coming on. A lot of great information, a lot of inside information. Where can people find you and potentially sign up for a lesson at some point?
Yeah, so my website is my name, RefleskiGolf.com. I'm also on Instagram at Refleski. That's probably the best spot to get me. And then obviously I'm teaching at a Riverbend in London, but I do travel a bunch to a number of different clubs, Toronto, Mississauga, Royal Montreal. I do days for those clubs as well, so it's kind of fun.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate that. Certainly, as Stefan said, some great information there, and it was great to finally get you on. Best of luck this season with all your players, and yeah, whether they're tour players or amateurs.
No, thank you so much for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Gareth, for that interview. I love the tips at the end there, the 20-foot drill. I wish there was a putting green I could go do that on. so I might start doing it on the carpet just to even practice that. But it's such a cool drill. I want to get one of those golf mats. He's inspired me. I you know how my game is. He talked about, you know, Ireland growing up and how you had to be good in chipping and putting because there's no such thing as target golf. There's target golf here, and I still have to play like that. So I may as well work on the chipping and putting, and everybody can benefit from that.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a simple thing, as you said, but you know, people don't realize that, you know, going out and working with the best players in the world, they're just like you and I in some cases. So, you know, they need that calibration work as well. So that's really cool insight from him. And hey, why get a tip of the week from me when you have a tip of the week from him?
I love it. neither of us won at the RBC this week, so I'm still...
We did okay, though.
We did pretty good. Every guy made the cut. You know, the worst finish was Will Zalatoris at T42, and he was right there early.
Fitzy ran out of gas.
Yeah, Fitzy looked good. Cam Smith looked great. He's going to watch out. And Chucky Hoffman, as I mentioned at the time, was a little bit of a, you know...
Flyer.
It felt good. It was a flyer. Yeah. T18. That's Chuck. Yeah. That's Chuck for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to put some money down, and you know, not necessarily for the wins, they're definitely we've been in the mix the last couple of weeks for sure.
Now we have this silly tournament this week, the Zurich Classic. I don't want to go through pairs or even feels on it. Here's what I'm going to say. How about this? We both pick one pair. Just right. One pair, and if for some reason it hits, the bottle of wine's back. I went first last week. You can go first this week. Who's your one pair?
You know what? I'm going to go Cam Smith and Mark Leishman. I'll take the Aussies. I think they're a good mix. That's obviously awesome. They're both playing well. Cam's on a bit of a heater. I think they're fun guys. New Orleans is a fun city. This is a place where you got to go and enjoy yourself. And, you know, TPC Louisiana is a golf course I think they'll both fare well at.
I'm telling you who I'm not going to pick to start. And these are the worst odds I've ever seen, considering both the Morikawa and Wolf at 15-1.
Like, why do you think they're that bad or that good?
I can't tell you.
I mean, Morikawa I can see, but Wolf has done nothing.
Can't break. He you can't even see a shot he hit at the Masters on the Masters app because
exactly
he pulled our boy there and signed for a 79. We put up an 87. So I'm not picking them. I love this Kirk and Todd pairing that I think there's really? Like a lot of people. I'm not going to pick them. I love them, but there's a lot of people that aren't going to know who's who. And that really excites me.
That's funny. Actually, I never thought about that.
That really, really excites me. You know what? This screams, of course he did. I'm picking Tony Finau and Cameron Champ. I have this theory. Tony's going to win one of these weird ones he won a second one. Everyone's going to roll their eyes at. So I'm picking them.
It'll be fun to watch, though. It'll probably be the pair. I mean, if you're there as a spectator, who wouldn't want to go watch Tony Finau and Cameron Champ? Come on.
I remember chatting with Martin about it and being about Cameron Champ being like, you know, everyone's long out here and he's right up there with everybody. And he's like, I've never been where I'm like, you know what? Like, I noticed something. Like, this guy's hitting it by me every time and far. So that's he's a guy that I think I need to go see watch at some point. Hopefully one day inside the ropes. That would be pretty cool. But, yeah, so I'm going to go Finau Champ. You're going Aussies. We'll see what happens. See if we pick up another bottle of wine. I'm still waiting. Still waiting.
For I know. For the lockdown. Record. Lockdown. Lockdown. I'm shopping. I've been shopping. I've spent more time on the LCBO website picking out the levels of wine because I'm expecting to get another win or two. And I mean, I saw your post about the Camus wine or whatever. Yeah. Like, oh boy. I got to go have a look at that and see where that falls in there. But I've definitely been shopping for wine more than ever that I've done ever before. That's for sure.
I had a nice bottle show up at the house. A good friend of mine sent me one as like a congrats. It's my favorite wine I've ever had. You got to order it by the case. It's by a company out in California. It's called Tin Barn Cab Sauve. Yeah, very good. She won't hear this, but thank you anyway for it. She knows it's my favorite. If you can get your hands on it, you know how. Reach out to me. I want to get in touch. We had a long interview this week. You don't want to hear many more of us. So why don't we hit up the mailbag and then wrap up this episode, Scotty? And before we hit the mailbag, Scotty, a reminder that this episode is sponsored by Ping.
At Ping, we're an engineering company. Success is measured in the lab and on your scorecard. We focus on results. Your results. In the G425 Max Driver, that means more time in the fairway, less time in the rough. It means longer drives, shorter approach shots, and fewer putts. The new G425 drivers, taking MOI to the max. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, let's get to the mailbag here. Some great questions. Thanks, everybody, for sending those in. Number one, if I am getting excessive spin on my driver, but I'm hitting the ball in the middle of the face, I checked it with spray, what can I do to bring the spin down other than buy a new driver? I guess that's what everybody does, right?
Man, there's a lot of information that we're missing here. I have so many questions that I need answered.
You know what? Let me go just with an easy one. I would probably say that, you know, from a spin standpoint, and if you know you're getting it in the center of the face, I would say chances are you're probably delivering a little bit too much loft, or you have a little bit more downward angle of attack. So I'd say the first thing for you to look at would look at how much loft that you've got on that driver. And if you've got an adjustable driver, maybe tweak a little bit off of it. I don't know what kind of driver it is. You can message us back and tell us what it is, and we can help you out with that. But just try a setting that takes a little bit more loft off the driver, and that can help you out with your spin loft and kind of bring things down a little bit. That would probably be an easy tweak just to start with.
I like it. Oh, that's probably the best answer. I'm not going to add to it.
All right. Simple enough. Next. All right. The PGA Tour is a team event this week. Have you guys ever played in a team type event that was memorable, good or bad? Oh, boy.
Yeah. So this episode's sponsored by Ping. And I've been lucky to be invited multiple times to play in the Boris Classic. Andre Boris, who's, works for Ping as well. And we've had on this podcast one of the greatest guys out there. He has a Ryder Cup, the Boris Classic, Canada versus the Ukraine. And I was on Team Ukraine. It was awesome. I got drafted. I probably was like last draft, just like
probably like looked at you and go, oh, he looks Ukrainian. We're taking him.
Yeah, he paid. So we have to draft him at some point.
Sure.
It was awesome. I love playing in that type of stuff. So I had a partner. We just clicked early, and they kept setting us up together and playing alternate shot. I love alternate shot, things along those lines. So. That's kind of it. Obviously, I don't play matches. I don't even go out and play golf just for strokes anymore. I want to play some sort of match, team events with friends out there, and that's what I find fun anyway. I don't have any experiences of bad outside of maybe like scramble events, but not in a two-team event. It's just too much fun where you actually feel, you know, you're working with somebody and together. It's way too good, but you've been playing in tournaments your whole life, so maybe you have some bad examples. I went good. I'm going to make you go bad.
I've played in more than a few, especially, you know, you get the fall scramble circuit that you play in, just some terrible weather. But you know what? I'm going to throw our publisher, Jeff Botter, under the bus here. I played with him in a team event. We used to go play in this event. It was called the BMW Challenge, I believe, and it was held at he was a member at Greyhawk in Ottawa, and it was held for a couple of years, and you'd go and play in this event, multiple different formats, and you go on to a Canadian championship, and they had a world championship even. Well, one year we surprised ourselves. We went out and played. We didn't even realize it was a competition. We just went out for this men's night. We won it. And then we ended up going to the Canadian championship, which was great. But the next year we go back and go to play it. And they had added one, it was turned into a net event, and two, they had mixed in alternate shot in there. And you mentioned that playing alternate shot.
You hate alternate shot. Is this why?
Yeah. Jeff had the shanks.
Oh God.
So if you're with a partner, you've worked hard on this par five to get a ball down right on the edge of the green. You know, the flag is right there, and you just have this little simple chip, and you look at your partner and he shanks it and misses the whole green.
Oh man.
It's not a good scene.
My buddy Sebastian, every once a year he sends a text that he's got a case of the shanks.
Oh,
just
boy.
Once a year. It's weird. It is like a flu, right? It just comes on you for a few weeks. I actually shanked one today when I was whacking him out in the soccer field. That's whenever I think of that, it's like, yeah, please don't happen when we're trying for one of those RBC scrambles or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all I could do for the rest of the round was just try to get us in a situation where we didn't have a situation where he was going to have to chip, because that's was going to happen. So, yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare. Needless to say, we did not win that or move on to the Canadian Championship that year. That's for sure. All right, on to the next one here. What's the max limit on pole cart accessories? My buddy's cart looks like it is ready for a mission into Mars. Any thoughts on that one?
I think if you I think if you get the seat, you've hit it. You know what I mean? Yes. You know, the seat that goes down, and I think it like,
that's the mark. That's the benchmark.
It's kind of benchmark. It's kind of practical in a way, but like at that point, if you need to be sitting and you can't wait to the bench at the next hole, I think walking isn't for you anymore. Like, I think you've hit the mark. You know, the mittens that are actually clipped into the
toes are beautiful.
Those are something. Speakers, accessories. I might actually add, I was thinking of adding spinners to the side of my wheels.
Might like as well.
Pimp my ride style. You got any other suggestions here?
No, it was funny because when I read the question, it just evoked such weird images of people, and you think about them now. I mean, so many people have these elaborate carts, and they just seem to be adding more and more and more. And I saw the other day on Instagram, somebody like advertising some, you know, a little bin that you would add to the cart that you put like your sandwich in, and it was like an extra drink holder. And I'm like, whoa, 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 like, slow down here. We've already got enough pockets and enough spots to put enough crap.
Oh yeah.
In
like
there.
The rangefinder attachment, like there's a buggy right there. Like, throw it in that thing. Sweater holder.
Exactly. Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should come up with the weirdest accessories that you could possibly get for a push cart. Well, we'll do that some other time.
My buddy Danny, and now that I put it out there, we got to do it. He's been pitching this this game. Is it a gimmick or not? And he wants to come on.
Yeah,
us a bunch of different things that are gimmicks. Right. But
I'm game for that.
He was the first one I ever saw with one of the click gears, and he had it all, right? He had the thing, and I actually have the thing. You have the one handle up top, and I find it actually helpful, but like, he wanted the mittens, he wanted the seat, he wanted the, you know, the extra cooler pouch, the umbrella, like,
At what point do the accessories cost more than the card itself?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's just crazy. And my dad the other day, hey, can you give me some prices on an electric cart? And I could count on one hand in the last decade that you've walked. What do you need an electric push cart? Like, you're not going to walk. So what do you need it for? And it's just like, it gets,
well, I can't imagine
much.
As well, the weight of them. I mean, once you start adding more and more things, because I've seen it a few times where they have the umbrella clip to it and it's like screwed right in there and the wind starts coming up. And next thing you know, the cart's going flying all over the place. So, I mean, you know, at what point is there diminishing returns to putting all this stuff on your cart?
I'll tell you this. The diminishing return is the guy that showed up. Did you see this? The guy that showed up the Corn Ferry Monday qualifier today with a wagon and his golf clubs inside the wagon.
Do you see what he shot?
Bro, it's got to start with a 9.
Keep going. It was 108. 108. And you know what? Josh Hart was the low guy in the group. He shot 2 under, and he played with the guy that shot 86 and the other guy that was 108. I tweeted about it, and Josh tweeted at me and said, yeah, and I had the guy's card too. So he had the card for the guy that shot the 108. And I swear to God, he was wearing a clown outfit too. I don't know if you saw that.
No, we need Josh on the podcast immediately.
I think so.
I need to know the story of that. Next week, let's dive into that.
All right,
we can't get it next week unless we finish this episode. We got two more.
All right, two more. In your opinions, what's the worst habit that a golfer can have on a course that affects others or the course?
Ooh. Well, that's both. I think you can just be awful to be around, right? And I think that just makes the whole experience, you know, you're just grumpy. We've all been that person, 100%. Sure. I think last year, I told myself once the pandemic happened, we weren't even playing golf. Hey, when I get out there, I'm just going to enjoy it. And I think I've enjoyed pretty much every round since. Like, it doesn't really matter out there. That hat that G4 has, nobody cares. There's other words
you shot.
In there.
Nobody cares what you shot.
What you shot, it really played true. So I think that in terms of the course, you know, I told this story on the podcast. Around the greens, when take your frustration out on the green. There's nothing worse. I had this guy one time in a Flagstick Open. I'm pretty sure he's banned from every Flagstick event since. He three putt doubled the par 5 fourth hole at Equinel. He picks up his ball. He just spikes it right in front of the hole, and then walks away. And I was like, oh, don't worry, I got this. Like, I had to pick up his. It's stuff like that. Don't do that. You're a loser. The guy was a loser. There's a reason he can't play in any other events.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know what? The one that bugs me all the time, and this used to bug me when I used to work on the golf course, was the cigarette butt or sunflower seed guy. they get spit out all over the place, or people just leave their cigarette butts all over the greens. They're careless about it. And then you go there as a greens crew and have to come in there and cut, and you're picking up all this stuff and whatever. And I mean, there's just no point to it, really. I mean, it's just, again, it's about not caring about other people, and it's being selfish is really what it comes down to, and realizing that, you know, don't just do it because it's good for you. Just understand there's other people that are going to play the golf course as well. So I think it's just habits like that that you see all over the place where people will do that sort of thing, but they just don't care for the golf course. And the golf course workers have done a lot of work to make it good for you.
You remember quickly, Golf Digest, I believe, came out with this article, like, things to never do on a golf course. And the dumbest one ever was walking across the green with your bag on your back because it makes you heavier.
And puts come on. In the green. Are you serious?
Dead serious. Dead serious. It was like an actual thing not to do. And then if you watch any event ever, any professional level, obviously the caddies are standing out there with the bag on. It just killed me. I guess I'm 50 pounds heavier now. I guess I got to get off the golf green. Hey, Larry, you're too heavy for the green. You're heavier than me. Get off.
I mean, you go over to the UK and I get it. You know, you've got fescue surfaces. They're sometimes a little bit firmer and stuff like that. But, you know, even if you're down at Cabot and stuff, people just rolling their push carts right across the cart. Across the green. It's perfectly fine. It doesn't really hurt it. It's a different situation on some other golf courses. But, you know, again, people complain about certain things that maybe they shouldn't.
Yeah, the cart weighs less than you do.
Yeah, exactly. There's whatever. Other people been there before. Anyways, on to our last one here. Should the PGA Tour be playing more courses like Harbortown to help equalize the fields?
To equalize it. The word equalize changes things.
Yeah, me. I think so too.
If that's your intent, I don't know. I don't know if it actually does by any means. I hate to break it to you. The longest hitters, there it's an advantage no matter what the golf course is. They're always going to be at the advantage. So I don't think it really matters. I think this, I think it's a cool course. I'm always down to play it. I would like to see all different types of course, but I don't actually think it does anything.
Yeah, I don't think it really does. I mean, I'd like to see more courses like Harbortown just because it's a cool design, but you know, in 48 PGA Tour events, there's just so much variety within the players and the skills that all the golf courses require of them. I don't think you want things to be equalized. You want things to be different. You don't want one player to be, you know, dominant every single week just because of the golf course, which is not going to happen anyways. So I think, you know what? Have more Harbortowns because you like the golf course, not because it's going to equalize the field, because it's not necessarily going to do that. All right, those are our questions this week. Keep those questions coming. We appreciate the support by Ping Golf for this episode, and especially heading into that mailbag there. And send us more questions next week, and we look forward to answering those.
That's awesome. Thank you, everyone. No tip of the week. You already heard it in the interview with Gareth, so we can just wrap it up right here. For a golf tournament this week, the PGA Tour playing the Zurich Classic, probably won't watch any or much at all. LPGA. LA Open, you know.
Yep. Our boy Corn Ferry's in Texas.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. How about Mark Baldwin? The week he had, weights around on Thursday, isn't in the field. He's on the range, warms up twice before he actually even is told he's in the field. Goes out, grinds out the first round. There's no way he was going to play well in that first round. Second round, just one of the best players out there. Gets in, makes the cut. Awful weekend, as he kind of put in his own words. Still home on Sunday night to be the best man in a wedding. You know, all around good guy. You know, free rolled the weekend. Made some money. That's all that really mattered. And, just awesome to see him get in the field. And hopefully this can happen more and more. He doesn't have to keep stressing over all these alternate events and hoping he gets in the field. What a good guy, though. We're always rooting for Mark.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's great to see that he's in the field this week. And if people don't know who we're talking about, go back a couple of episodes and definitely catch the story time with Mark. I think you'll definitely appreciate what this guy is all about. And you'll certainly want to follow him on tour after you listen to that.
Yeah, we'll be getting him back at the end of this year for sure. And hopefully he gets on a good run here and maybe makes his way up to the PGA Tour. Well, that's it for us. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our guest, Gareth Rafluski, for coming on, giving us some tips, talking some tour talk. Thank you to Ping for sponsoring this episode. Make sure you check out the new G425 irons. They're long, they're strong, they're a nice iron. I'm a Ping guy through and through, and we're gonna get to the bottom of it. If they if you know, I'm still a name that they talk about around the offices
in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, or if they're still talking with their lawyers of if there's, you know, a cease and desist to make this make happen. Any final thoughts, Scotty? Do you think by next week when we record this podcast, we will have some positive news about golf in Ontario again?
I certainly hope so. There's certainly been a lot of push towards that. You know, nothing is guaranteed for sure, but, you know, let's just keep some positive thoughts out there and keep that energy going. And in the meantime, we'll try to keep everybody entertained with lots of golf talk.
All right. I like it. That's it for us. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back next week. We'll chat with you then.